was working down in Kinsale in a large open office area, and one morning I was in early at work, and there was a wick down at the other end of the office. He was welcoming in some of his colleagues, and he welcomed them with the line, with the following line: "What news, Centurions? What news of Cork?" So I just thought it was a good line at the time, and so I wrote it down, and I assumed it was from Shakespeare, a quote from Shakespeare, from Julius Caesar or something, but I googled it and I couldn't find it, but if anyone knows where it's actually from, it's obviously a misquote, but if anyone knows where it's from, I'd be glad to know. But anyway, I decided to write a response to it, so this is it. "What news, Centurions? What news of Cork? Only the mossy green pavements and the tired slabs, the gullies wandering into iron grates, whose imprints solemnly betray their age, cast in Bristol or in Harrogate. Only the uncouth houses on the narrow streets, the shambles skylines with a hint of grey, the topsy-turvy roofs and gable ends, crawling up hills in ever-varying lines. Even the new and clean edifice confounds the eye. The glass constructs in blue metal frames, purple and green copper domes and plates, violet exotic timbers and panelled walls. None of them know their place amid the red and white, sand and limestone structures of the past. Aspiring towers cast long shadows in the river. Elysian dreams, well short of Elysium. What of its people? What news of them? As you left them, Consul, except they've changed. Swollen in numbers since your last campaign. Now every tongue on earth can be heard. Close your eyes in Marlborough Street and listen. I hear them, the tongues mixing. The brittle patter of Pana with the foreign threads. I know their songs so well and ask. Are they as happy with their newfound wealth? Their ivory towers? Their elegant lanes. They are still a rough and tumble people, children of country folk a generation gone. Crude laughter still falls hard from open windows. Sarcasm envelopes their muddled talk. They still walk with the unsure gait of deprivation, though decades have fallen since it held them in its grasp. Their sad eyes and rough, ready faces. And rough, ruddy faces speak more of past news than of the new now. They celebrate as well as ever. When their teams win, crowds gather in Dawn Square. They sing and drink high praise into the early hours. They leave the forlorn, rain-wet, dingy streets, strewn with detritus."
How are we doing? Tina Pitzko.
This is kind of didn't expect to read, but I wait. This is called Safe Harbor. My hand slithers over shoulder, slides down flank, and snakes under your arm to wrap itself around your wrist. Thumb hooked unto the crook of your hand. Anchored, I pull in close the both of my curves to your body's shore. Belly to buttocks, hip to hip. Our legs circle, caressing, entwine, and then untangle to lie side by side, tidy as coiled rope on a pier. A quick other one. This is for my daughter, who's a dancer. It's called Magic Dance Song. You are a magic dance fountain where acrobats gather to celebrate. They somersault, leap, and roll, do handstands below as you pirouette on a spray of inspiration. Others gather to gawp at the spectacle of this beautiful woman rising high above them, her eyes flashing green through the silver droplets as she twirls. And they wonder how she does it. They who can only stand and watch, shuffle, crawl, and creep. They marvel as you leap over heartache and joy, once for the girls, twice for the boys, dancing to music only you can hear.
Lovely stuff. What about the first one there? Johnny, you have to check for IDs at the door first there, okay?
That was maybe one of the raunchy ones.
Fred Wildman. The co-winner of tonight's Nakamura Slide.
I think I ought to start with the amusing now. Mine's not poetry, it's just rhyming doggerel. I don't claim to be a poet. This one's called Rabbits. Lettuce and rocket I'm striving to grow in pots placed on windowsills with dishes below. I have beetroot and onions, the spring type as well, all raised off the ground to dodge the munches from hell. I'll attempt to explain and tell the problems I face. My garden is a haven, the furry's favourite place. They munch without stopping, eat all that looks green. Herbaceous boys intending to scream. I'm running out of places to hide all my shoots. Their new leaves are spreading, more strength in their roots. The furry little blighters up ever more near, gazing up longingly, showing no fear. I can walk in my garden, they're just up out of reach, leaving just enough distance I can't close the breach. Suggestions of shotguns from less soft-hearted friends, killing cold-blooded will not make amends. I have no solution, I love the little sods. I can only stand guard and just pray to the gods that rabbits stay grounded, lovingly sublime. Mountaineers they will never be, learn how to climb. And just a quick one to my late wife who died of cancer in 1986. It's called Dreams. Dreams are all that remain of my once before life, smiles in the haze for my never again wife. I can almost believe she's right there by my side, and I wake, I discover my senses are blind. She'll visit in court every once in a while, cast her eyes round the bedroom and give me a smile. I do all the talking, she's silent it seems, no critical admonishments here in my dreams. Just one harsh little word to scold or reprove, but her lips never falter, never offer to move. Not, I wish I was with you on your travels and you. Just one single word, are you sorry, would do. The smile always present, frustrating to see, seems to be saying, at last I'm set free. We dream of many things as we turn in our bed. When we wake, it's not easy to pick up the thread. Explanations can vary of our dark nighttime life, and you'd expect them to be filled by a long-deceased wife. I rarely dream of fishing or the orchard I back, curled up in my blankets, warm in my sack. Poor Jean haunts my mind at least once. At least once every week. I wish just for once she could manage to speak.
Thank you, Greg. Well done. Thank you. August Anish, Pierce Cecilia, Esquelga, Phaedra, your son. How many are there?
Hi. I know English for this, sorry. And Sionikin, which means musical accompaniment. Nader er bin kumis no twigness a hushig er madin day. A fin suidness son ho bean ho mean rakola kyo la fea dunum. Be tear the ood in a baha, a dying to gum ho town, gum a hover so a bishop. Ach din a kyo is in kumis. Is found mouths in uidness. Grevin suidness exchange farum, agus unum.
Thanks, Aura. Next, we have David Connolly. Colder days and duller hours, but at this moment I sit like book next to cup, spine unbroken, thoughts wrapped in a neat cover. Often I flip through but dare not break the dam with its page layered lake, but flick and take one page, one thought at a time, and examine with the wisdom of distance, and distance is time, and time is time is time is time. And there will be a right time. And now could we welcome John Brocken.
Just a little one that I call simply at the museum. A tourist walking around a museum was impressed with all that he saw. The way in which things were laid out and displayed, the place was without a flaw. There were relics of times from a bygone age which showed how things used to be before the arrival of modern man. Times were tough, it was quite plain to see. There were earthenware pots and old-fashioned cots among the knots of items on display, and chalices of gold and legends that were told about times in some long-distant past day. But what impressed him most was not any ghost, but the skeleton of a dinosaur. He wondered about how old it was, so he asked the attendant to be sure. "He's 2 million years, 6 months and 3 weeks." The attendant, with confidence, replied. The visitor was most impressed with such precise knowledge and looked at the attendant with pride. "How do you know his exact age?" the visitor asked, to which the attendant replied with a smile on his cheeks, "Well, when I started here, he was 2 million years, and I am here 6 months and 3 weeks.
Thanks, John. It's not yourself you're talking about there, isn't it? Next up, can we have, I have to be very careful with how I word this, the new, or actually I could say the second Queen Mary of the O'Connells, but it's not, it's actually the new, or second, the other, Mary O'Connell, Mary O'Connell.
This is a tribute I wrote for Michael Regan, the longest echo vendor on Partick Street. I don't know if any of you know him. And some of you might have read it was on the Evening Echo a couple of weeks ago. Very just very bad here, and I have no glasses. Congratulations, Michael Regan, it's your golden jubilee. the longest standing echo vendor on the banks of the Lee. That has to be a record on Cork will agree. You're a loyal, true worker. You'll go down in history. You stood at Princess Street corner outside Cavendish's store, at the other end, Burton's menswear, on in Cork City's days of yore. The changes you've encountered, you sure could write a book. It would be a bestseller. You deserve a little luck. You've seen all sorts of fashion and every passing trend. You could write, you tell us many stories, to you our ears we lend. You're part of Cork City, you've earned your title well, serving generations with the echoes you so proudly sell. It's clear you love your work and you very much enjoy. For 50 years have gone by since you were an echo boy. Every morning bright and early, the Irish Examiner you also sell. For 41 years, another record. Congratulations on this as well. Outside the Bank of Ireland, on Plata and days of yore, now you proudly sell the paper outside the O2 store, where the management and staff to you are very kind. The stand that holds your papers to you each night they wind. 42 years you've had the pleasure to visit City Hall to see the new Lord Mayor elected. Now it's your turn to stand tall. If ever echo vendors elect an echo mayor, Michael's sure to be elected year after year. So congratulations once again, and long may you enjoy selling echoes and examiners as you did when just a boy.
Thank you, Mary. That was great. And next, could we please have Marie Cohen, Mary Cohen.
The bureau. He kept dynamite in the roll top bureau in the living room. Used to quarry limestone in our farm, the squat cottages were stacked inside hairy cardboard boxes. I would look at them as they sat innocently on documents, bills, on the butts of checkbooks. One day I found a cartridge that had rolled free, asking me to weigh its danger in the palm of my hand, its fearsome charge contained in that bright red casing. The crocodile bag. It was my christening gift from an African missionary. The small crocodile clutch had a tongue-like fastening, raised hard scales were cracked with riverbeds. My mother didn't care for it. Likely it was made from the hide of a Nile crocodile, she said, the biggest and most fearsome in the whole world. Just the look made my spine shiver. It rested for a while, buffed by the socks in the sock drawer. It gleamed between the dull, forgotten shoes stacked in the wardrobe floor. I once found it buried in the jumble under the stairs. Then I would cherish it, prop its mouth open with a pencil to air the mustiness. I couldn't wait to wear it, a promise of elegance, grown-up accessory for a mother of pearl prayer book, a freshly laundered handkerchief. The last time I saw it, I was about 12. Its shine was dulled, covered in the fur of a white growth, moulding under the sink.
Great to have him back. Paddy Doyle.
I want to be with you. I want to let you go. I want to be your arrow. I want to be your bow. I want to be your lover. I want to be your friend. I want to be the man you fell in love with then. But things have changed forever. We go our separate ways. Yet you are still the measure of all my happy days. For I am still a boy when you are in the room. You're still the girl I dream of when I gaze up at the moon. You are still the star to which I steer my ship, and you are still the land towards which I'm sailing it. You're my deepest anchor in the wild wind in my sails, my safe protected harbour in wild and stormy days. I want to be your lover, yet I want to let you go. I have one hand on the arrow and one hand on the bow. My heart is full of sorrow, my eyes are full of tears. But as I let the arrow go, I let go all my fears. And as I watch the arrow fly, the whole world falls away. All my days return to night, your dark night turns to day. And high beneath the sun, the eagle spreads his wings and casts his awkward shadow on everything that sings. For silence is the womb of song, and dark the womb of light. It is the blessed darkness, love, that makes the stars shine bright. And the dark side of the moon, in the other world, shines bright. So the seeds of all our sorrow may yield fruits of sweet delight.
Thanks, Betty. Next we have Esther Wienowska. Is it right?
Thank you. After hearing such a good, well-write poem, I feel like mine, I shouldn't really read it now. But thanks to my friend, I'm on the list, so I feel like I should know. So there it goes. It's related to my artwork I'm working at the moment. The title is Then. He was perfect, but he wasn't happy on his own. Then he got a present, a flesh from his own. She was perfect too, and beautiful also, but she wasn't happy either. Then she also got a present. Because she was curious, she accepted. We all know the rest of their love story. Now, we are all imperfect. But can we be happy? Well, if they couldn't, how can we be? Or maybe we should. We all know where it leads them. So maybe we should at least try and be satisfied. And then my friend, she came here tonight for the first time. Unfortunately, she has to go. But she wrote her little poem. And I felt like maybe I should read it, because, you know, she wrote it, so. Start writing. I keep hearing these words. They are all in my head, one strong voice. Go away, please. I only want to drink. I want to be outside to breathe the fresh air in. Forgive me, dear people. I don't mean it like that. I love you all, but sometimes I feel empty inside.
Thank you, Esther. And next up, could we ask the microphone for the first time, Dean Long the Great.
I actually had a different day, but I thought I would progress. Dean Long the Great Beloved. Oh God, life in a song. The dairy of the far, far away, the Greenland as we all know it, is where I grew up. After every day after school, I dropped the bag, tore off my school clothes, and redressed into suitable clothes to get all the stains you all hear about, the grass stains, the muck stains, and the unbelievable tears. As you get older, things change. The adventures you had don't seem as good anymore. So you get into the cool things, as they say. You get into sport, music, and the best TV shows, so you can talk about them with all your friends. Then your teen years, AKA the experimental years. Women drink and cigarettes, the teen years, the magical years, all the glory but none of the consequences. Now I live on my own back where everything I do has some sort of consequence.
Thanks, Dean Long, great. Next up, could we have... cheers, Fred.
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome. Seamus Harrington.
Thanks, Paul. This came out 10 days ago, and it went against the usual run. It was electronic, and it's gone to hard copy, which I believe is going the opposite way. There's 10 poems and 10 prose pieces. And this one is about a tall ship in the port of Gothenburg. And it's called The Viking. And there's a mention of the truck, which is the disc on the top of the mast, or flagpole. And different words like that have two meanings. So, The Viking. She'll have no truck with mock tall ships, bulimic tanks of liquid gold. I don't propose to bend a knee, and never would unstep a mast to suit that bridge that hems us in, to harbour years of gangway life. We'll stay secured and keep each guest their posh hotel, my tumble home. My figurehead will often cast a jaundiced eye on Lego ships with cargoes boxed in vivid stacks, bad-mannered ribs and soap dish boats that skim across our basin berth, and towering hulks decked out in glass where bubbling pools of idle rich old landsmen soak their golden hinds. Her secret wish has always been return again to naval days, the trill and ring of ordered steps, a manifest of fresh cadets to line the yards, parade of sail. Those forecastle airs of every ilk, our master's voice across the poop, and gimbaled hours away offshore. The soundless mitt, a bosun's pet, his musing gaze as flying fish play and break about my lee cat head. In distant roads, the windless song, transcendent moon, her ebb and flow. We'd love to seek a further voyage, secluded shores I've yet to trace, like sights within the piper's sound. And yes, I miss this canvas press, feel foot ropes dance where topmen tread, at harbour's mouth a lash of salt to rinse my plunging pencil line, a creaking sheave, the quiet routine, ice broken clear in furrowed drills, the scything wind at each crow's nest, a field of wheat discharged at last. Thank you.
Thank you, Seamus. And next up to you, Evan Mike, I'm sure you won't mind me saying, could we have Queen Mary, the first of the Ovelle O'Connells?
Thank you, Paul. I didn't know I was a member of royalty until tonight. This is called Dancing Demon, and I'm sure you will guess what it's about as I go along. A shield before your eyes that blinds your view, keeping its canvas taut into the gale. A gust takes hold and bundles you along. You fight a giant bat hauling the sail. Desperate to buck each snap and crack of cloth, you turn a whirling dervish in the rain. It fails to find its previous plumped up shape. The onion dome has wilted from the strain. Now it collapses in a mesh of wires, with jutting spindles that just miss your eye, becomes an upturned tulip then implodes about your ears. You wish for it to die. You bury it alive inside a bin. This friend turned enemy had too much spin.
Thank you, Mary. And next up, we have the lady whose book is going to be launched here next week, Patricia Walsh.
Thank you, Paul.
Why are we doing for time?
Not great. Probably about 5 minutes each, I guess.
I'll just read one poem then.
4 minutes each.
This one is called Lighting Wires. Order is crumbling. Fire, fire away. Put the embryo to the candlelight and watch it tremble. Gestating from a worse sin into a new extreme that is not yet dangerous. Crushing yet well behaved outside its privacy. Of fruition and tears. Where on twilight dick pics I actually kissed you. Yanking wishes from troubled sleep. Recurring a dream to its newfound success. Thank you.
Patricia. Next up, we have Rosie O'Regan.
This is one that I wrote at the workshop with Camille this evening. Let's say I haven't written anything in ages, so it helps me up there. And so it goes. Life is held together is we draw up walls to walk through, find ourselves outnumbered on an irregular basis. Our childhoods forgetting us, bringing those days to words without form, finding we are but a phrase in a book without no end, with no end, sorry, never the same.
That's Rosie. She poets. We've got extra time. Joe Harding.
Memory of music. It's about an imagined paranoia. It's supposed to be about paranoia. Paranoia is all imagined. And you think that something is happening and it's not happening at all. I know that when I go there, it will not be the same ever. There will be no mass to welcome as before, bringing me to a new continent, privileged as sun. That is the way it used to be. Small things always occur that will not satisfy old agreements, plugged, fused, to keep those hearts beating. But I knew then, and for months, those cracks had appeared without an earthquake of words, and that is what silence lacks. A basic commerce flowing before the flood consumes the memory of music. Thank you.
Thanks, Joel. And next up, can we have, is it Marlene? Marlene? Marlene. Marlene.
Okay, I'm enjoying this poem, kind of thinking about how when we're remembering people we've met before in our lives and when we're trying to think about them and things and how they affected our lives and the experiences we shared with them, sometimes we might remember who they are, their faces, their names, but we just kind of, everything, the experiences we had kind of mingle together and kind of form one whole thing. And that's kind of what the poem is about. It says, I don't see your face or recollect your stature, these are forgotten. I close my eyes and picture you, the essence of you. Little tingles fizzle in my blood. I see colours and clouds, each an aspect of your personality. Warmth and cold combine, sharp edges clash, at war in my soul, and mingle, making the colours unique to you, only you, always you, forever.
Mm. other winner of tonight's Mechamara Slam, Levi Jewett.
I just think before we start, if you don't mind, we should all kind of give a small round of applause to, I guess, the real winner of tonight's challenge, which was most certainly Fred, who was with us there a little bit earlier. So, whether or not he won this. The mathematics, the science, the numerical order of it all, a continuous line, forever parallel, now broken. Can you integrate, differentiate, even pronunciate the ways in which such a line, a life, is transformed? Geometric disdain, algebraic profane, tell me, what exponentially increased statistical formulae can adequately compute you, me, even the concept of a day? A river, slow, deliberate, unstoppable, unbreakable, unmistakable, erodes, abrades, and undermines the hardest rock, granite, diamonds. What can stand against a trickling, gurgling brook, or stream, much less a tear? A lesson in inevitability, no? Hydraulic action, reaction, diffraction, and of course a ripple, always a ripple. What have we learned, my friends? What have we seen? Mathematics is monstrous. Nature is a monster. Have you met yours, the horror within? I have, and it approves. What's done is done, but the fight still rages on. Life is a fight. Battle hard, my friends. Can you contain him, her, it? Can you? Or is it he, your monster, your demon, your dream, containing you? Don't tell me. Please don't tell me. Tell you.
Thanks, Eli. And next up, we welcome Conor Gabbard.
This is a short story, or part of a larger piece, though. It's called The Orange Maxi. It's not actually as long as it looks. The bin men were waiting for my father to move the car so they could continue to nudge down High Street and collect the rubbish from the row of public houses. The tipper truck that they foisted the dustbins onto was taking over. I was standing in the doorway, and my father and Tom Finn were in the car and ready for off. On Low Street, the girls in the royal blue uniforms were loading onto the bus for Carrick. The car was an orange maxi, and I was with my father when he brought it from Dickie's. I'd spent the previous evening in it listening to the big 8-track cassettes of Johnny Cash. Coming from the garage, he'd stopped in for one in Lowe's on the corner, and I watched the side door for him to emerge. And when he did, the shout in the street distracted him, and I saw him wave, beckoning. I looked in the wing mirror and could see James Pryor, half running and half walking towards the car, with his left hand pinning the flaps of his jacket to his stomach, and a cigarette in his right hand. When he got to the car, he put the cigarette between his teeth and opened the door and jumped in beside John Lynch, who was with us for the spin. My father got in at the same time, and the car shook and the doors banged. God bless you, mighty man, James said. Did you get a new yoke? No, I was just while the Woolsey's in with Dickie. The Maxi had a front wheel drive, and it could go up the Bakery Hill in frost without batting an eyelid, Dickie said. But this was June, no sign of frost yet. He had the boot down, passing out by the great concrete water tower that supplied the whole of Carrick, and I felt big because I was in the front. The Maxi is like the tinker's ass, hard started but a whore to go, Joe said, as we sped by the dump, with white plastic bags and black crows fitting, by the house and the trees that moved when it rained, and then past the house with no door, that Frank McGovern, who drove a beige minibus, said my dad had built. James pulled on a woodbine and was always looking for a lift, but he knew all sorts of things about cars, and there was a smell of cigarettes and sweet whiskey sweat and aftershave of them, and it clung in the car, and I couldn't make up my mind if it was nice or not. It was him who said, if you put the yellow plastic off the Lucozade bottle on the headlamps, you'd see better in fog. And he said, that's why all the French yokes have yellow lamps on them coming out of the factory, if you ever looked. But you can do the same thing with your good Lucozade wrapper. Fog and frost, my dad said, and the sun cracking the stones. You'd think it was the middle of winter the way yourself and Dickie were going on. Dad told him about the front wheel drive, and Pryor said Dickie was right, and started going on about an old Beetle the brother had that was hard bet, and who would drive on top of 6 foot of snow, like the time they were snowed into the pit of a Christmas Eve, and if it wasn't for the Beetle, there'd have been no turkey. It was June, and it was him suggesting putting the tin foil inside the hubcaps to reflect the guard's radar, or wrap the number plate in cellophane so they can't get a photograph of the plate. It puts a sheen on it and the camera doesn't pick it up. But there's near a camera around Ballinaglera, my father said. There might be the odd one up around Dublin. Well, I'd not be going to Dublin in this. Or if you were in around London. I'd hardly make London this week now the way the thing is gone. Boys that would be on the continent would do it. If you were heading down through France. Andrew Hussein suggested that you could jam the pop-up headlamps on Kilrain's new TR7 with a tuppenny bit. And when he'd head off at night, they wouldn't come up, and he'd be righty fucked. We sped across the humpback bridge in Leitrim, and turned sharp for the church, and pulled into the pumps under the road for a pound's worth of petrol, and the man's terrier barked for the pound note, and tucked it in his mouth, and ran off into the shop. Anyway, that was coming back from Dickie's. Now they were all set to go, and the bin men were waiting. My father turned the key, and there was just a click, and nothing. And he did it again, click, and nothing. And again, click, and nothing. Fuck Dickie anyway, him and his orange maxis. That's like the battery, I heard Pam Finn say. It might have been because I left the lights on when I was in the car listening to Johnny Cash, but I was saying nothing. At least not now in the state he was in. First not finishing his breakfast on account of the rat, and now this. Then Tom Finn got out the push, and my dad stood on the street with the driver's door open and his hand on the wheel, and we began to push, and the bin men joined in shouting to my dad too, sit into her, Paddy, and try her in second. By the time we were at the tailor's, she had chucked and bucked and started. The bin men cheered. As my father revved her loudly, waiting at the bottom of the street beside Hawk's TR7 for Tom Finn to jump in. Keep her lit, one of them shouted.
Connor, and next up could we have Annie Shaw?
Oh, what monsters may we find in the rougher corners of awakenings? What pale beasts once thought in God's own shadow have forgotten our memory of what they once were. Like blind men lost in dark caves, whose eyes fear the coming of the dawn. We must reach into those prisons where our thoughts are keys and embrace that fallen demon, that child who hides, jealous of our brighter moments. And with the forgiveness that I am, will he too find a love thought lost forever that morning with the apple tree.
Thank you, Eddie. And I think our final reader for the night has just walked in the door just in time. And we were actually about to send a search party out for him because he's been gone for so long. Mr. Alan Tiffey.
Thought it was hiding there, wasn't you? Know, same along the way.
What time did you call this young man?
What?
What time did you call this young man?
I was wondering, you know. This is a piece of a longer story that I wrote a good while ago. And it's written in various styles, like a drama, a bit of poetry, whatever kind of stream of consciousness, ordinary, third person, first person, and it's written in kind of a folklore style. So I can't do a Kerry accent or a West Galway accent either, but if I mangle my attempts at it, you'll forgive me and laugh. Right. So this is how it is. It's a guy wandering out at night and he meets a woman, and what happens after that? A fine young man, it's the middle of the story by the way, so you don't have to know the beginning. A fine young man he was, so he was, and he went off to earn his keep, as I will tell you now.
He was going off now with all of us and was getting no good of it at all until he came to this club as the dark twilight of night was coming down. It was the last of the day then, and there was neither soul nor sinner in the club, so he thought. And so he betook himself into the back room, and who should he meet there but three fine women on whom he pitched his fancy. He asked them, was there any chance of a bit of sport, or what, or could he stop tonight until tomorrow? They told him that there was not indeed to be sure to be off with himself, and to make out somewhere else, and to be annoying other bodies. He was a distance from the club, and the black of night upon him, when he met another woman. Isn't it late you're out gallivanting, he said to the woman. Were you in that club down there below, he said. I was, she said. Who was with you within, he said. There were some men, she said. And they wouldn't give you lodgings for the night, he said. They would not, she said. Now me neither, to see, he said. Success and venison to you for your one after my own act, she said. Come along, you blasted man, and maybe you'll get lodgings for the night yet. Well and good. They rose and bestirred themselves and went on their way. And when they were a while going along the road, there was nobody for them to see and nothing for them to notice, only fine tall mansions with big gardens and fancy cars which would gladden your heart. They did not stop nor shorten the journey until they came to a neat cottage beside the road. Anyway, they went in, and she put down a big pot of stew and a big pot of potatoes to boil. Ah, well, upon my soul, said the woman, sit down or do something useful. It's early days yet, he said, to be stopping the night. There is no man the likes of you who passes the night that you do not keep for the duration of the whole night, she said. Well then, he took off his coat anyway. She had a big fire blasting, and she produced a pack of cards. Will you play a game with me, she said. I will, why not, he said. They started to play, himself and herself, and when they did, she won the game against him at the very first go. Aha, she said. I put as a judgment and binding spells on you, and under the greatest pleasure of the year, not to eat two meals at the same table, nor to sleep twice in one bed, until you do the job with me, she said. Well then, this was the bad news with him, but it is well for me to shorten the story. Well, he rose up with a leap, and he went at it. Hammer and tongues, stallion force, blazes and boiling, curring fervour, cousin wallop, box and cock, staring down, nonny and no, loot and nail, snatch and berry, milk and cunny, rumpet steak, peat and boo, rod and sinker, smullet and stern, rattle and roll, storm and drang, hokey and pokey, gammon and baiting, what and not, Jimmy and Joyce, Willie and Sing, hoops and daisy, dick and cabot, jackal and hyde, fan and winkle, hock and pintle, hold it shebang, needle and anchor, franking further, needle and gnashing hairs, and this yin and yang, equal Excalibur, gung and hoe, yank and rule, cannonball, crack and hinge, a moor and preap, mills and boom, quivering poker, crackling baloney, tickle at alorum, for over and ovum, onan. Well, that's over now anyway, me man above, she said. You must marry me now, she said. That's the law of the land. Are you willing, she said. Well, and good enough otherwise, and he gave her a long look. Wishes that the way it is, he said, rubbing a palm to his eyes, to his forelock, to his brows. Well, he said, the young man said, that's not bad at all, be dead. What I want is what you want, as long as the day rises in the morrow, and the sap rises in the marrow. And it is what she said. Here, she said, take that for you now, throwing him his clothes. Great stuff and God's greeting to you, she said. We'll be knocking good times out of hard times for many times to come. It is reported that that's how John married the Red Woman, and it was said that they were often seen abroad among the copse of hay, making their sport for themselves and joy and happiness. And that's a true story without any lie, you know.